Mobile Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in Pragmatic, Minneapolis. This is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development.
I'm Lydia Simchich, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Mark LaCroix, and I too make nice games.
For this week's episode, our topics are the art of saying no and tiny interactions. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hey.
Listen, as you can tell, Mark is still feeling sick. So Dale is filling in for him.
Hi. I'm not really Mark.
You are?
No.
You've convinced me. I'm hoping that Mark is getting a little bit of rest, recovering from illness.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It always sucks to be sick.
It does, and this was a really tough cold for me, and Mark always gets sicker than I do, so he's not feeling good. He's like, he's taken days off of working.
That which sounds is very not like him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I know he hates doing that.
Yep, which is very not like him. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and stamina is always the last thing to come back, so even by the time this episode comes out, still send good vibes, because... it'll still be accepted.
Yeah.
I mean, good vibes always accepted.
Always,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True.
Okay. So, what are we talking about today?
Well, you brought a topic to the
club. I did. Why did I volunteer to do that?
I don't know. You were very excited about this topic.
I am also excited about this topic.
Okay.
Because, like, hearing from the postmortems of the Game Jam game, you exemplified this topic very well, and it seemed very appreciated and really neat. And it's also something we talk a lot about in games, especially if you are in game dev, when you have to like deal with scope and money and the scary businessy things.
Yeah.
So well worth talking about.
And that's why I brought it up, is it was because of the Game Jam, the Global Game Jam.
Okay.
I joined a team. Mm-hmm. I was producer, which means you hold meetings, basically, is my understanding of it. I mean, I produce this podcast, and that is, you know.
That's true. You do hold the meetings.
I sometimes go to the meetings. And,
yeah.
And I sometimes edit the episodes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
My understanding of game dev producer, I mean, might be a little, is also a little blurred with, like, project manager.
Yeah.
But, like, at least from my, they're the ones that keep the eye on the big scope, because everyone else, to get the job done, they have to work, like, they have to narrow down, and it's really hard to context switch between the big picture and the small picture when you're in that moment. Even like as a designer, where I have to kind of go between, it's still hard. And also, you are the one that had, like, because I worked with client work, my producer at one point said, my job is to be the bad guy.
Yep.
They're the ones who advocate for the team and the client and also try to make sure that, like, stuff happens and that we're protected.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I found during that experience was I said no a lot.
Okay.
And in a way that I was not expecting.
Oh.
Like, I had to say no to Mark, who I think is, like, the king of, like, saying no and, like, scope creep. Because I remember when you were making Fingence, you want to describe that? Sure.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I was just describing it as saying I was working on it for 7 years.
Uh-huh.
Maybe shouldn't have worked on it for 7 years. I don't regret my time, and we learned a lot from it.
Mm-hmm.
It was valuable. But, you know, there were some things that, you know, we could have cut down on some of the scope.
Give a genre of game for it.
For Fingence?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, I guess I don't talk about Fingence as much as I used to.
Yeah, because you're not actively working on it. That's good.
It's out. Yes, that's true.
Okay, download Fingence.
Yeah, download Fingence. It is a side-scrolling shoot 'em up. You play as fish that can't breathe underwater, fighting the Dolphin Empire.
Ooh.
Yeah, Lydia, you haven't heard of it.
I have not.
Yeah, it's fun.
No, and also my current work team is obsessed with dolphins, so...
Oh.
Like, high-key, gonna drop that in our Dolphins Optopic channel in Slack.
Yeah. You know, for fighting the Dolphin Empire, there isn't any dolphins as we would like in the final
product
of the game.
Dolphin.
There's a playable dolphin, but he's a flipper. And he flipped.
Oh, Yeah, he flips sides.
Yeah, he flips sides.
Oh, I think that's even better, though.
That's great.
Because, like, what I remember about Mark talking about Finjen is when he was at the office and Lane was sitting near him, he would tell Lane to stop, like, scope briefing all the time. Mm-hmm. And, like, Lane would have a great idea, and Mark would be like, no, this doesn't fit with your game. And that wasn't even his game. He had no investment in it other than, I guess, he would have to listen to you complain slash work on it a lot.
Yeah.
But I assumed that this meant that Mark was not going to scope creep himself.
Ah, okay. Mm. So that's kind of one of the things. It's way harder to prevent yourself from doing, from going in higher.
Okay.
Which is why we worked on Fingence for 7 years. and I think that, like.
And also why producers are so important.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And actually, it's kind of funny you said that because Mark tended to be the person who was pushing for more content in Widgets Agile than me.
Interesting.
And I was like, I don't know if the game needs to be this long. When Mark was concerned that, like, if the game wasn't long enough, it wouldn't be worth people's time.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it was reasonable. But at the time, I was like, I don't know. I don't need this. So
yeah.
It's harder. It's just harder to prevent yourself when it's just you preventing.
Yeah. So, like, I found that very easy to say no because you have this very tight timeline of 48 hours for the game jam.
Right,
and like Mark came in and was like, why don't we make the little bubbles being able to go down and bounce back up? And I was like, why would we do that? We don't even have left to right yet. And there's no point in it because everything's going to be floating on the surface. So why would you need to go down or up?
Yeah.
So this is a game called Gachamari. And you are a one of those little plastic toys inside a little plastic bubble. And then you go around and you collect other plastic toys while you float down a river. And so going down underneath the surface of the water, not helpful.
Right.
Going up and bouncing up and jumping. Not helpful because they're all floating on the surface of the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, very easy to say no because you have this, like, very clear reason.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of talk through when you should say no.
Yeah.
And why you should say no.
Okay.
And then probably the best ways of saying no, as well as when have you had to say no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's, I think, part of the reason why it's difficult to, like, say no to what you want from your own games is like because you're passionate about it and you're like in it, so it's like difficult to. I think one of the benefits of like being a producer is like you can
have
see
a
the whole picture and you can understand
a better
vantage point.
Yeah. And so like you can understand that like maybe this would make the game better, but we don't have a lot of time. You know, we got to cut it off at a certain point.
So from like a design perspective, I love thinking about those things, and I think they're worth honoring because they keep interest and morale and excitement in the team. That's why I love having a wish list pile. Literally, like, it's a Google document or a spreadsheet, or I even have had an epic in Jira for the project that is just wish list nice to have. If we come up with something, we put it there, because then there's always the hope that we would have some time, and if it's small enough, we could add it, and if it still was relevant. Because having it is a sign that something's working when you're super excited and you're like, oh, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this. And that's also worth encouraging because that means that the game has legs. But you obviously can't do everything.
Right.
And also you want to honor that part of your brain that comes with this those ideas, because it will keep wanting to generate ideas in the future. But when it comes to making a game, you can't do everything. It shouldn't do everything. And then you'll have a bad game. And so like writing a paper, you need to have a thesis statement for your game or have a goal and have a very focused one. So like the one that I always think of is the goal for the people who made FTL based on their postmortem on GDC on YouTube was they wanted it to feel like you are in the captain's chair in Star Trek when all of the red alerts are going off. That's what they wanted. And so the idea being, if it doesn't support that or help that along, it's not worth adding.
Yeah.
Because you're straying away from your main design pillar, your main goal.
Right.
So you need to be able to entertain those ideas, but not commit to those ideas.
Yeah.
And that's where it can get, it's hard not to do that for yourself because you also just need to feed your own like dopamine to get through the thing.
I think that's a very important point to do the work ahead of time and be like, this is what the game is.
Yeah.
Know that. And like adding more stuff might help the game and make it better.
Yeah.
But as long as it, if it's not following the your design pillars, then it isn't the direction that you had already set in place.
Yeah, so like your example of going up and down actually is really good, because it's like, well, why would you? The whole point of the game is to stay at the surface.
Yeah.
Was there anything that was suggested?
And then like, if you do that, then you have to put a reason to go up and down.
Yeah.
And that's way more work, so it compounds.
Yeah, that's true.
Was there any suggestion during the game jam that would have made the game better and you only said no because of time? Where, like, it would support the main goal of the game.
I can't think of anything right now, but that might be because it's, like, 2 months past.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you had to say no a lot because it's tiny.
Yeah, and a lot of my time was spent, like, if we want to do this, when does this have to feed into other things?
So, yeah.
Like, that's what my kind of project management was, like, hey, what do we need to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is, what do we not need to do?
Yeah, I think one of the things that can be difficult with a game jam is because you have 48 hours, it's difficult to like establish what the game is
while
you're building it, because you only have so much time and you kind of have to hit the ground running.
Yeah.
So,
like, you could spend way more than 48 hours in pre-production.
You absolutely can.
Yes.
Like, and in fact, you should.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, I was really happy to have that. My team also had very kind of design-minded people, because when I was working on something, I could ask, would it make sense for this to happen? Because I needed an answer.
Right.
But I was so, but trying to find that answer within me was going to be harder. Someone external would be like, oh, that doesn't make sense at all. I'm like, okay, cool. Not going to do that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Just being able to have that kind of,
that back and forth and that like, mm-hmm. outside perspective, even if it's within the team, somebody who's doing a lot of work,
because it could shut down ideas that just go into a completely different realm that you are not ready for or don't really need.
I find myself having to do that as the only programmer at Future Club, telling people we can't do this, it's too hard,
yeah,
we can't do this, it'll take too much work,
yeah,
too much time.
So
I'm kind of accustomed to it now, to telling people we can't do this thing. I'm like, I feel like I can feel myself getting into like programmer mode when somebody like suggests something. I'm like, it's way too much work. We can't do this.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks. But like, I think it's important, because otherwise.
It is important.
Yeah. Because otherwise you end up working in wildly different directions every other week, doing a bunch of different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then your game doesn't get closer to completion. It just gets bigger.
Uh-huh.
And that's bad.
Yeah.
You don't want it to just get bigger.
No, you do not.
Yeah.
So another reason that I was thinking of this topic is because there was something that I don't want to be like I had to say no to, but like I had to help somebody understand why like it wouldn't happen right away.
Yeah.
And it was basically in a team, or, you know, in a company, and I work in a totally different industry. There are people who have time and there are people who are, you know, in demand, and they don't have time.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of things where people don't understand how long it takes to do something.
Yeah.
So one of the suggestion was like, well, why don't we just validate this process of doing this rework? And the answer is because it would take this guy who already I have trouble getting things out of him. And like the actual time it would take to do that is like, you know, 60 hours of work time.
Yeah.
Versus you could look at everything individually and fix things individually, and it would take you, you know, maybe 10, 12 hours of work time. And like, there is a point where it gets to be better to validate it, but not until, you know that stuff is going to come at you multiple times.
Yeah.
And so like, it's sort of a workload thing. Like, why do I have to do this work? Why can't somebody else do this work?
Yeah, but sometimes, like, I mean, it sucks to say that sometimes somebody's time is more valuable than another person.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, ultimately what it is like, this person is the bottleneck, and they need to be focused on the thing. I'm the bottleneck oftentimes.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the bottleneck talking.
Yes. Well, yes. That's something I think about a lot, too, because, like, I want to learn how to do more things, and I always am in a state of wanting to be helpful.
Sure.
But because there's such a fear of double work and wasting that time, there's this innate kind of fear of, if I should take, be proactive and step up and try to do something before having to bug someone else who's already really busy and like is a bottleneck.
Sure.
But am I making more work for them in the future by doing this myself?
Right.
Or something like that. And it's that's the other kind of flip side of it that I've been struggling with a lot lately.
Yeah, I think of this story where my brother-in-law was like, I want to drywall my garage. Mm-hmm. And somebody was working down the road and he was like, how much would it be for you to like drywall my garage? And the answer was, if we put the drywall up and we screw it in, like coming over and like pasting it with that wet stuff, I'm sure this has a name.
Yeah.
Is going to be $300. If you hang it up, it's going to be $500 because they know they can do a better job with the hanging, that it's going to be less work even overall versus somebody who is an amateur coming in and trying to line up some drywall.
Right, yeah.
With your example, you know, if this is a one-time thing, it's probably not worth trying. But if it's a thing that we're going to need you to do over and over again or would be helpful for you to do over and over again, like, I don't know, editing a podcast?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's definitely a skill worth learning. Yeah, but it's hard to make that distinction.
I think it's hard also because it's like, is the skill always going to be needed or is it just that we're chronically understaffed?
Well,
Yeah. And that's a problem with dev teams.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I feel like with creative processes, like a lot of this stuff has to be a conversation. Like,
yes.
I guess ultimately somebody has to say, you know, it determines where the time is spent. And so somebody has to say the no. But there should be a conversation around these things so that, like, if there are ways that things could get done. So, for like example, Lydia, if you were interested in learning how to code did this at Future Club too. If you're interested in, like, learning how to code a little thing and, like, your programmers maybe didn't have enough time for it, you could, like, do this thing. And maybe the programmers would do it in 30 minutes. It takes you 5 hours. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's 5 hours there, or it's 30 minutes they're not spending.
Yeah,
And 5 hours that you're spending learning a thing. And you could potentially figure out how to code something else like that in the future.
Yeah, true.
So, like, part of it could be an ongoing conversation. But ultimately, someone has to say no to the thing if it just doesn't work out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess here's a question then. And I have an answer of how I approach it, but I'm curious how you do it. How do you say no a lot and maintain that you have the authority to say no without being a heckin' bummer? Because it also, like, not only not want to discredit yourself with your team and lower morale, but it also just sucks from if you are a person who gets excited about the work you do, it sucks to say no so often.
Okay, I'm going to hand this one over to Steven.
Wow.
Says no a lot.
Oh, I see.
And then I'll take it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it sucks because I literally am the ultimate authority in terms of programming. I'm the one who does it. So it's easy for me to say no to a thing because I generally know how much work it will take to do.
Yeah, and that's really important things.
Yes.
And like, I know that when I am asking somebody to do something, a lot of times I'll be like, hey, how hard would it be?
Right.
Same.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that helps. Just to be clear, like, I don't necessarily know how hard this would be, but this seems like a cool idea. Is it a cool idea? And oftentimes people will ask me a thing and I'll be like, no, we actually could do this. Wouldn't take that long.
So. It's nice. I still am surprised whenever there are times where I think something will be harder and it is a lot easier than I thought. And I'm still pleasantly surprised. I'm getting better at going like, that sounds hard, especially when it comes to programming tasks. But I still verify because I have been wrong.
Yeah.
In both ways.
Asking is good as long as you're okay with getting the no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, I think what I do is I will approach from a place of curiosity about the thing. I'll be like, why do you want this thing in? Is there another way we could do the solution that is maybe easier for us to do?
Yep.
And then, like, if there's no other way to do it, then eventually I'll just be like, well, we can't do this. But, like, if there might be alternatives. And so that helps if we, you know, talking through it helps.
Yeah.
Yep. Like, I think people come up with an idea that might help. I'm thinking about it in terms of, like, game design. Because oftentimes people will come up with a solution to an issue they're having in game design, with the game design. They'll come up with a solution and they'll be like, well, I'll present this as an idea. And then I hear it and I'm like, this seems like a whole overhaul of what we currently have. And yeah. I'm not, and I wouldn't blame them because like they don't know the code. They
I mean, I did. This also applies to literally anything.
Yes,
I want to say because like if it's cooking, if it's interior design, if it's like learning and development, if it's HR, like if you're in a corporate place or you're just organizing your room, everything can have the conflation between solution and problem is very real and it's very valuable no matter what you do to start trying to untangle the two.
Right. And so like what will often happens is I'll hear the solution before I understand what the problem is. And so I will then I'll be like, why do we need this solution? Couldn't we do it a different way? And then they'll explain what the problem is. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. Then I could be like, oh, I guess actually that does make sense. And this is a problem. We should solve it this way. Then I'll reevaluate time and stuff. And then maybe we could say yes to the thing. But it basically just has to be like a conversation. And it helps to approach it from curiosity. Because then it feels like they also understand why you're saying no to a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, when you were saying no to Mark and everyone else in your group, I assume you weren't just saying no just to say no.
I mean, like, I wasn't saying no just to say no.
Right,
I was saying no. Well, I was saying no because of time constraints.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get people focused on, like, let's do the things.
Yeah.
And if we're, you know, 3 hours early with actually having a viable product, then maybe we add something. Maybe we add an end screen. Maybe we like really work on getting that high score thing to work, even though that's a goal. It's but, not necessary for it to be playable.
Right. Yeah. But even the way you were saying no to things, you were like, this won't work because it will add to such or to the scope or something like that. You explained yourself. Sometimes people will just be like, no, and they don't explain it. And that gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
Because we're not kids. We're adults. You can explain your what you feel.
Steven, you cannot have dessert before dinner.
No! But I want it. Yeah, so I think that kind of helps. It's just like explaining yourself, explaining your position. If you have an understanding amongst your team already, then like people will come at you from that perspective. Because they know they don't want to, like, I mean, even the way you were talking about it, Lydia, like, you don't want to put more on a programmer's plate.
Yeah.
Even though, and so, like, you will ask about it in a way that is like, will this take much time? Even though I think it's a cool idea.
Yeah.
And they can be like, it is seem like a cool idea, but, or whatever.
Yeah. It is a cool idea and it will take a lot of time, but this will be reusable in the future.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, like,
I love having just keeping thoughts in your back pocket for the future.
Cause I loved your wish list too.
Yeah. I love it because the thing is that it always can be mined for some other project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's even worth, there are some things that are worth a little investigating to see how important it is. Like one of my favorite things I ever wrote for my last job was I spent a day, I don't know if it even was a day, but I have this nice little one page thing in our running breadcrumbs document because we were all over time zones. And so we would leave messages, like essentially a write up of what we did or we're thinking about to comment on.
Yeah.
And it was just, I wrote, it was called Percussive Maintenance or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Spanner. And basically, because we wanted something a little wacky, we wanted adventure, we wanted something to feel kind of janky and you're making do and it's fast paced, we were thinking, like, okay, is the breakdown of your machines a mechanic we want to, and you having to fix your machines, a mechanic we want to have as something like a hitch? Kind of like if you're in a McDonald's simulator and the ice cream machine breaks down, is that something we want to have as a hitch to your lunch rush?
Yeah.
And so that was an exploration I did of, okay, what are some funny ways that fit the vibe of our game, which is also a goal, that would work with this kind of as a very easy way, quote unquote, or a very simple, easy way to fix a machine that is broken. The funniest answer is you hit it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I was exploring percussive maintenance and how that could work as a very, like, as a minimal viable product, potentially.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things I've ever written. And that took a day.
Yeah.
If that ends up being used, great. If it doesn't, at least we gave it the best shot and and we scoped it in a way that's not necessarily literally ours, but in a sense of what does this mean and what does it do?
Yeah.
And what value would we get from the amount of difficulty that we think it could have maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I think that, like, just making sure to approach it from a place of empathy.
Yeah.
When you're asking.
I love saying, I love this. I wish we could do it. I don't think we can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's so many times you have to kill your darlings that you really just don't want to. And you're like, this is so cool, but we can't.
That's actually a really interesting question. Because, like, I think that, like, there's a certain point where you're saying no to things a lot more frequently than it feels like you should.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, maybe you start need to really, you need to make sure everybody's on the same page with what the game is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's actually a good point.
Yeah, because like sometimes.
Because that means something's missing or something's not hitting.
Right.
Or you are in the trenches of a particularly thorny problem and you need to have some reprieve somehow.
Yeah, and then that, and the clarity on what that issue is not apparent to everybody.
Yes.
It's important to make that clear to everyone that, like, I'm having this issue. This is why I'm presenting all these ideas, is because this is my problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't figure out this problem this way. So I'm approaching it from a bunch of different angles, but none of these angles seem to be working.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it could be like a group thing sort of thing, and everybody could work together to try to come up with a solution to the problem. Or you're like, well, actually, maybe we just cut certain such and such, and then it works out. Then you got to say no to some of the parts of your game.
Yeah.
Oh, sometimes they've already built.
Yeah.
So that was one of my things in my, like, the sunk cost fallacy.
Yes.
And how bad it feels to cut something that you've already invested so much time or so much money into.
Yeah.
And how you make that decision. That seems like an entirely different topic, huh?
That's
a little bit, yeah. But well, it's relevant.
It's very relevant, especially when it comes with money, because the thing is like everyone is super, like, iterative work is so fashionable.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But when it comes to iterative work of, hey, we need to throw these things out, then people balk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's scary. But also, like, if you're, it's scary for the people who really are advocating for it too.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it comes to like other people or stakeholders, you know, you having to argue for that is scary.
Yeah, that's true.
And it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just feels bad.
It feels bad. So another thing I put in the notes is like, what you're really like losing and gaining is you're losing this work on this thing that, you know, maybe you know it won't work out. Or maybe you think it won't work out. Or maybe you find out, like, the price is too high for it.
Right.
Whether that's time or money-wise.
Yeah.
It's best to cut it as soon as possible so you get less attached to it. But where you're really gaining from that is a new opportunity. You can put all of those resources into something that may be better.
I mean, even... if it that sounds scary, having it, taking a half step back and saying, as soon as you realize something's going to be a bigger can of worms or a messier thing than messier feature, messier process than you initially thought, bring it back to the team and go, oh, we investigated this and this is going to be a lot harder than we thought.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, it may be that that is more, it isn't more important for some reason and you have to pivot in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Or it may be, and therefore you have to cut intelligently, or it could be the obvious thing of, okay, we tried and we can't go any farther with this because this will be the thing we do if we do this.
Yep.
You'll have to pivot.
Yep. And I kind of think about like that kind of thing with like Steven, since you started working at Future Collab, there have been several different ongoing projects and the focus seems to switch between them.
Yeah.
And I think it's very hard for people there to understand which is most likely to be successful.
Yeah. And well, actually, it's really easy for us to move on projects because we pitch it to a bunch of people and they all say no. So
okay.
Well, then we're like, okay, we'll move to something else, I guess.
So there's another good, a recent one that actually might be a good example if you're aware of the team that made Celeste. They just in the last few months announced that they were canceling a project that they were going to work on.
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. And that was, their blog post was really good. Where essentially, you know, they were saying like, everything is fine. You know, we had to work things out, but we are choosing to go to stop this project. And here is why. Uh-huh. And it is hard, but they have ultimately said that it's the right decision. And I think everyone, like the blog post was really good in being very measured and very honest, but not being, I guess, bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, I think it's also a good example now, a little bit later after that blog post came out, of what that it is not for naught. It is still fruitful. So like, afterwards, very recently, Lena Raine, who is one of the best composers of music, she released the soundtrack that she had made for that project. Uh-huh. Since it's not going to actually happen, she released that soundtrack, and the proceeds from it are going to a trans charity.
Oh, awesome.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, having it's nice to see that it wasn't for naught and that there are still pieces that can do good and be good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that you still can learn from it, as painful as it might be at the time. It's not going into the void.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely there. It's when you give up on a thing, you don't like lose out on all that work. It just didn't become a final product.
Mm-hmm. And that
sucks because you can't sell it.
It's painful in its own way.
Get to finish a thing, like you're saying. But there's a lot of lessons and things you learn from it, including learning that it was time to end, you know?
Yeah.
That's important to be able to recognize that, like, this just isn't working out the way that we had intended it to.
Yeah.
And just cutting it off there.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job. We're going to cut it off there and switch to the next topic.
Sounds good. Okay, so it's been a little while since we've talked about the feedback form. NiceGames.club/feedback. But I was looking at it, and you know, we don't have a lot of responses, which is a real shame, because we should really all be sending plenty of feedback of praise of Lydia being on the team and being on the podcast. So
cutting criticism.
No. All good notes, because there's nothing bad.
Ruthless critique.
So go to nicegames.club/feedback. Give us feedback. You know, one thing that is really annoying about how the feedback form is, nobody has given me any feedback on or what I said wrong. There's a whole section on there that says, tell Steven why he's wrong.
What?
No one has done that. What the heck? Go to nicegames.club.
Well, it's certainly not because you weren't wrong.
Right. Definitely not, because I have been wrong times.
Oh, boy.
So someone let me know what's up. Go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell us.
So, in the topic of scope creep.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And saying no, I want to talk a little bit about when something was said yes to, which is so small and so tiny that it seems meaningless, but yet it's so delightful. Mm-hmm. And that's just tiny little interactions in games.
It is kind of fascinating to put these topics to as a pair.
I know.
Because these are the little things that probably took a decent chunk of development time, but maybe. Like are still nice.
So the main examples that I can think of is maybe, and this is especially because I watched a lot of horror Let's Plays in the 2010s and now, and so many of the people who were playing them would, if they were ended up in a bathroom, which are one of the scariest because the stalls, who knows what's in there, would try to flush the toilets. And it's always delightful when you actually can flush the toilet.
Uh-huh.
There's no reason to. You just press a button. There's an E to interact. You press it and it makes a flushy sound. But it's delightful. So in the same vein, and I think this will get a lot more people snapping in agreement, is petting animals. So whenever you can approach an animal and just pet it, like in Assassin's Creed or something.
Yeah.
Or if you can, there's
a whole website for that.
Yeah, exactly. Why is it so compelling? And what other examples have you had of just little tiny needless interactions that have made you so happy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was like a whole, back when The Last of Us Part 2 came out, there was like a whole thing about how the hoses in The Last of Us Part 2 like would move with the physics behind all of that. I think a lot of game devs were very impressed by it because it was a physical marvel.
Mm-hmm,
physically in the game.
The physics of the movement of a hose are hard to program.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I think there was a lot of, I think some players maybe would notice that kind of stuff. But like, ultimately, a lot of these like little interactions that you get are for specific types of players.
Yeah. I mean, there's like interactions. I also want to do a quick shout out to Polish. And other things. Yeah. So the one that I thought of in particular is when female characters walk like women. Because, they don't look like their lower spines are made of jello.
Yeah.
But also they aren't a, men's walk cycle rehash.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I think that came up, that was a lot more, mind-blowing when people started doing mocap and you can actually have actresses, actors moving like their anatomy should, because it was their anatomy moving.
I would not describe that as a tiny interaction.
I know. This is honorable mention. Other honorable mention is continuing technology advances for curly hair.
Mm-hmm.
Because oh my gosh, that's a lot of programming. And we still don't have a lot of good options for curly hair, especially super tight, like curly hair, yeah. Like four C and B hair, like the super afro hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Working on that.
They are working
on it. Honorable mention, but that is a different topic, I think, than tiny interactions like press E to flush a toilet. I mean, even like press F to pay respects. Imagine if you could just do that at every headstone. In a game, every time you encounter a dead body, you could just press F to pay respects. Something like that, where I like, why is that sort of thing so compelling?
Well, so that's actually really interesting, because like I would argue that's not a tiny interaction, because it's, you could use it for several tombstones. And I guess kind of the same with like flushing a toilet.
Yeah.
But like, you're not often, I think oftentimes you don't interact with a lot of animals in games, and so like there's special attention put to like cats and dogs or
because you don't go into a cat colony and then pet every cat like you would a graveyard.
Exactly.
Or yeah, that's, you know,
very good comparison. Yeah.
Or, you know,
well, that also gives a point,
you
of
know,
like,
or you know, in lots of video games you kill people.
Yeah.
Your goal is not to kill or feed cats.
Yeah,
I guess that's also a good point, though, because it's like, okay, you have a lot of animals. Do you only allow petting cats and dogs? Do you? There are some games where you can also pet pigs, but then do you also do that for horses? Do you also do that for goats?
Right.
Do you do that for the animals that are going to kill you? Like, you know, there's scope creep even within the tiny interaction decision.
Well, and I guess my argument was going to be like, I feel like the tiny interactions that I was thinking of are just like really little tiny things that you can do in this one specific moment that you can't really do in the rest of the game.
Yeah.
It's just because you're in this moment. Like, if you only see one headstone and you pay respects to the headstone, and that's the only headstone you see in the entire game.
Yeah.
Then it would be, that to me feels like a tiny.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
But like if there's just headstones all over the place, then like.
That is fair. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. So, I mean, I was thinking, my only thing of multiplicity is like a bathroom with multiple stalls. You can flush every toilet. But that's true. There might only be one bathroom.
Right. And that often is the case. You're not running into several bathrooms in a horror game, I guess. I don't know. I don't play
horror
games.
Depends on the horror game setting, yeah.
Okay.
Assumedly, you only have one bathroom, or they're trying to get a payoff in the bathroom, and then you're suspicious of bathrooms for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
Enjoy when you can sit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that is nice. Those kinds of things.
Sitting on the toilet or on a bench.
Yeah, I think those kinds of things are nice because it makes the world feel a little more
rounded out.
Yeah, like
you whole. Can role play a little more because you don't just go in a bathroom and look around.
Yeah, because that's the thing about sitting down is I have mixed feelings about sitting down in games.
Okay.
I specifically like when I get to sit down and then it's still and the camera view is such that I am looking at the scenery. I can maybe see my person.
Yeah.
But if it's like, if I'm just sitting down and I see my character sitting down in the center of the screen and I'm just looking at my character sitting, then I'm like, why am I doing this?
Uh-huh.
But if I'm sitting down and both myself and my character are enjoying the moment and able to do that, that feels worth it to me. You know, because then I'm sitting back. It's like leaning, it's like taking a moment at the wall of a party, you're looking around going, and people watching.
Yeah.
Or looking at your scenery. That feels good to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. There can be more to the tiny interaction than just the fact that you're doing something.
Yeah, I think it's very much the idea of agency. If I want to do that, is it going to let me?
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's part of it is like, I want to see if this is possible. And if it lets me, it feels really good. It feels like I got listened to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems to me the best types are the ones that like immerse you better into the world, or it can be little character moments between you and the character you're playing as or whatever. I think that becomes more valuable, and it makes sense for a person or for a team to like put that into the game versus like, I don't know, I guess like petting the cat is important to people who aren't me, but but I think a lot of people like really like that stuff. But I also think that people like it started to become like gamers are pressuring developers to put that stuff in the game. If there's a cat in the game, you better be able to pet it, otherwise the game is bad. And I'm like, that's ridiculous.
I don't want to push back on that. I want to push back a little bit on the fact that it's more expected now, because I'm thinking about like old PC game. I mean, especially old edutainment games.
Yeah.
Where there were so many, like, you could just click around the environment and the environment would do stuff. There'd be little wacky animations everywhere. And so some of the fun was just clicking around and seeing, you know, does this do anything?
Yeah, but...
And it was just an extra animation and sound effects. Yeah. It cost time, but it was delightful.
But it's also makes sense for a point-and-click adventure game to do those kinds of things because you're pointing and clicking at a bunch of stuff. Yeah. So it makes sense that you would spend time pointing and clicking at other random things.
Opening covers and closing covers and opening covers and closing covers.
Right.
Yeah.
Doing that over and over again. Yeah, it makes sense that you would be able to click all of those things.
I guess.
So I think it makes sense for that game to have to, like, it builds the world out more, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a silly world. You can click on stuff and things happen. And so it makes sense that you, if you clicked on a random cabinet, it would open and close even if there was nothing in the cabinet.
Yeah. I guess then is it an extension of if you are, is it good to think about it as a extension of things that you're expected to do in the world itself? So, for example, with the toilet, like, you're in a horror game, you need to open up cabinets to find stuff because you're looking for materials. Maybe it's like Resident Evil or whatever.
Sure.
And you're looking for herbs. And so you're already going to be, or you're opening things to try and make sure you don't die. Mm-hmm. Then clicking on something to see if there's something makes sense. Like, you would open a drawer.
Yeah.
So then it's not one-to-one, obviously. But is it that far off to say, oh, I'm going to see if the toilet flushes? Mm. With petting animals, I think, like Assassin's Creed, you can eavesdrop on people. You can pickpocket people and follow them.
Uh-huh.
It's not an immediate jump, but is it that far of a jump to say, well, I want to pet the animal. I want to pat down this person's pockets. I want to pat down this cute pig.
Yeah, that makes sense. That could be part
of it. It's definitely not a one-to-one. It's by mechanically and implementation-wise, not.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, part of the reason why maybe it's easy to implement flushing a toilet in the game. If you highlighting over this thing, you hit the button, the handle, and then the sound comes out. Maybe some water comes out. That's extra scope.
Yeah.
That's a broken toilet, man.
Yeah. Oh,
makes
no.
That's for a horror game. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, I think that ultimately, like, that feels relatively small in scope. But, like, honestly, petting cats and dogs and stuff, that's a lot of stuff. Mm. Like, you got to have animation for the dog or the whatever animal you're petting.
They're so cute.
I understand. I'm not trying to argue that people shouldn't be trying to add petting animations to games.
Yeah, it's
just
a longer.
It's not for me, doesn't mean
that it's still one animation, but it is a longer to produce animation.
Yes. Uh-huh.
That I think is the thing.
Like,
you can have the cat animate the same exact way with your character,
right?
And it's a little cutscene, but that is a two model cutscene that you have to animate together with a sound effect.
Yes. Yep, rather than one handle jiggle and one sound effect.
Yeah,
and that's the reason why you can't really pet any animals in like Zelda Breath of the Wild, and instead you like spin around and the dog spins around. Because, fun, but, like, or you don't have to have Link animate petting an animal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think also there's things like if you walk near an animal and it follows you for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's also really charming. And mm-hmm. that's very real, too. Like, dolphins will chase the wake of boats and then say bye and leave, and it's magical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many of those little things, and they're so not needed.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need a dolphin to follow you when you're in a boat and you're going to shoot somebody, but it's still nice.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
To have this dolphin watch your murders. But I think people really like those little interactions, and they do add to the game. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're not valuable. It's just that they do take time away from the other aspects of the game.
Yeah, I guess. How do you even begin to look at that cost to benefit ratio, especially when there's so much that has to go into making a functional game baseline before you even think about polish or extra interactions or whatever?
That is that's a question for somebody who's made larger games than I have.
Yeah, same.
Because I'm oftentimes being like, we can't do this. It doesn't make any sense. It takes too long. And it's tiny, as I've described.
Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, maybe at the point that you are putting dogs in, you have that question ready.
Yeah. Right?
Because, you know, if you have time to put a dog in that is not central to your game, then you probably also have time to make two extra animations.
Well, and if you don't, then that's a question that you need to have with your level designer and go, okay, we're putting the dogs in. How are we going to put the dogs in? And if they have to be behind a fence guarding the chickens that are also behind the fence, then that might be the solution.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, we need to add dogs for immersion, animals for immersion. The players are going to want to pet it. We can't have them pet it. We can't afford that time. how are we going to incorporate them in the world so that way they are there, but they're not as interactable, or it's clear that they're not going to be as interactable as one may want.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or is there a halfway, or, like having them follow you?
Yeah. Or is dogs the way that you make it more immersive, especially if you know that players are going to be looking for this specific interaction that you can't afford to make
from a dog? Yeah. Like, is it better to have chickens? Because people, I would pet a chicken.
I think people kind of want to pet chickens, but it's not as effective as a dog.
Oh, you can have geese. No one wants to pet geese.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have chickens or do you have geese? Do you have dog or do you have, what's an animal that no one would want to pet that's dog sized?
A wolf.
Yeah.
People want to pet wolves.
Yeah.
They shouldn't pet wolves.
They absolutely
should. No, they should not.
What? People want to pet wolves.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's something where if you get too close to the wolf runs away because.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you can't pet the wolf.
That yeah, something too. That's more obviously wild and has that response. Then it's kind of fun too, because it's like, how close can I get to the wolf before that startle response kicks in? Oh, I got this close. That was so cool. I'm gonna follow it.
Yeah.
That actually has some fun things. I know Skyrim, one of the things that they say is follow foxes, because foxes will run away from you. And the thing about the way that they found that if you follow a fox, it'll usually lead you to a tomb. The reason is because the AI of the foxes is if they are running, they will start going towards something, the thing with the most polygons, which is typically a mountain.
Okay.
Oh.
But, you know, it also has a lot of polygons? Tombs.
Okay.
With lots of treasure in them.
Yeah.
So it ends up being, that ended up being kind of fun.
Interesting.
While being realistic and a good sidestep of like, okay, they need to go to a forest to lose the player.
Well,
guess what? You've got some treasure to hunt.
Are there other examples of tiny interactions that y'all could think of that like really added to the game?
I know that there are some out there.
One time in Assassin's Creed, instead of petting the cat, I accidentally killed the cat.
Oh no!
And all the cats were very angry at me and followed me around.
Oh, that's like the cuckoos in Zelda. If you accidentally hurt one of the chicken guys, then they all get mad forever.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
A bold admission on Nice Games Club.
Yeah, and then I ran away.
From Dale especially.
I don't know if this counts, but something that has always delighted me and my brother in Civilization IV Golden is when you zoom into your cities of any civilization, it plays the civilization's music, no matter what era it is. And so, like, my brother loved the Aztec music. Oh. And also, the Aztec civilization was his favorite color at the time, which was green. And so, like, he would always play as Montezuma because he could always play the music.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he loved zooming in and seeing the whale and the pigs and all of the little animal models.
Yeah, actually, that's a good... Civ has a lot of that, actually.
Yeah.
It has, like, Civ 7 also has those things. You can zoom in and you can hear, like, the buildings that you put in there. Like, exploring the museum. You can't, like, zoom in on the museums and stuff, but, you can still, like, hear the ambient noises.
Is this why it takes so long for you to take your turn?
Wow.
Ooh, shots.
No. I'm just slow at it.
There's a lot to decide in a turn of Civ.
Because I was like, I don't ever do that. I didn't know that was a thing.
Try it.
When you're waiting on me to take my turn.
Yeah, next time.
You can zoom in on the sales.
It's fun. I don't know if that actually counts, but I do really enjoy it.
I would consider that a tiny interaction, I suppose. Because I don't think, like, a lot of people would notice. Like, Dale didn't notice.
Nope.
But it's so delightful just when it happens. And I love that it like, especially when it's with Civ 4, just how much, when you're in a game of Civ, just how much your civilization changes over time fundamentally. It does not look at all like it did when you first did. You can zoom in and it's always a little bit of the same. You're like, oh no, this is still the same game. This is still the same culture, civilization that I've been with since the beginning.
Yeah, I suppose, now that I'm thinking about it though, is it actually a tiny interaction? Because like, if you zoom in on any of the parts, it will make those noises. Because that's not a small thing. I guess you had to make new sounds.
I mean, it might be different between 4 and 7, though.
Well, I'm trying not to contradict what I said earlier about how tiny interactions need to be, like, really specific little interactions instead of, like, you could do it for a variety of things. Like,
that's true. That's true. I would say, like, focusing in on zooming into your city plays the music for your culture, your civilizations.
Yeah,
that is a little interaction that I think is cool.
Okay, yeah, that, in the newer, at least in Civ 6 and 7, you just hear their music playing without you having to zoom
out. Oh, okay. Oh. No, if you zoom out in Civ 4, the way it works is if you are in the map, it plays the era's music, unless you're so far out that you just see the whole globe, in which case you have silence of space.
Okay.
But it's the era's music, and then only when you zoom into the city of your own civilization do you hear your own civilization.
Oh, that's interesting.
In a while.
You can't zoom in that far. Or zoom out that far in civilization.
Really?
Seven,
you can't.
Or six. So.
Oh, yeah. If you zoom out all the way to the globe, it's just quiet as space.
Yeah, there's no globe. It's just like zoom in a little or zoom out a little bit for six.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Well, there's still, I mean, I think there's some stuff that they prioritized.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe like people didn't really pay attention to being able to zoom out that far in Civ 7 or Civ 4. So they just removed it from later Civs.
Yeah. And I guess it's like, you know, it seems like with 4 then, maybe the reason behind where the juice behind that extra scope was, we want you to have a sense of differing scales.
Yeah.
So like,
right.
You know, by a couple ways, how far out big picture in the world, in the sense of the world you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From very, very local individual tiles to the entire world and its span.
Yeah.
And that might have been the reason why it was justifiable in 4 and maybe not as priority later on.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think that like the little tiny interactions that you add, they add little flavor to games.
Yeah.
And it is worth like considering these things. But I like the way that you phrased it earlier, Dale, where like if you're like, well, if we're gonna add a dog, we're going to feel pressure to pet the dog because we like petting dogs here at Dog Pet Studio.
I think the general population likes petting dogs.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
In addition to Dog Petting Studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there's the question of how do we add it if we can't?
So, well, that's the thing, right?
Or if we can, how do we add it?
Yeah. If you're gonna add the thing, how do we add it? And figure out that ahead of time, then you could put it in the scope. Then it's part of the scope.
Mm.
It's part of, if you're going to add a dog, this is part of adding a dog, is being able to pet the dog. Otherwise, you cut adding a dog and there's no dogs. And then people aren't disappointed because you can't pet a dog because there's no dog.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I guess that, I think it helps to like frame these little things like that. Because it oftentimes feels like, you know, the whole game was being developed and then like they had this idea where like you could cut the cloth of a flag or something just because it's there and you want to do it.
Yeah.
Like I think those kinds of things, like interacting with cloth physics,
yeah,
and like being able to cut certain cloths.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I was watching somebody play the new Assassin's Creed game, and like they were slicing something, and they ended up slicing a flag or something like that, and they're like, "Oh, I sliced the flag."
Yeah,
I didn't expect that. Those kinds of things. It oftentimes feels like those kinds of things are added like late in development as a spur of the moment. Oh, I felt like adding this thing in. But I think the way that you framed it, Dale, is probably more accurate. They planned for this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend a bunch of time thinking about all these little interactions and then set aside some time to implement it.
Mm-hmm. I think also another thing, because I just remembered one of the little details that I loved.
Okay.
Where in Okami.
Yeah.
They have a moment. So your main mechanic, you have brush mechanics. Mm-hmm. And so drawing is pretty like a standard thing.
Yeah.
And at one point you need to paint a mask to wear because you're a wolf and you need to disguise yourself to go into a place. Literally, it's just like a piece of paper on your face. And so I, being a history major, or history major Japanese minor, wrote the word for idiot in Japanese, baka. I just wrote baka as the face.
Okay.
So I just had a face that said idiot. And then, you know, wandering through the game, I go into a new town and there's graffiti on the walls. And it's what I had written on my mask.
Oh my gosh.
And that's a wonderful, because it's like, hey, we had this thing. We have the data now. Let's use it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's like these little kids saw me with the face, with the mask. And so they graffitied my mask onto the walls in that city. That was so
crazy.
Funny. And it makes sense. They have that data. They have that image already.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
And I think so that sort of thing is also delightful, where it's, we have this for another reason. Can we use it anywhere else for something totally useless?
Yeah.
But fun.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to rescind what I had said earlier about like tiny interactions have to be really tiny specific things. They don't necessarily have to be tiny specific things. Because like that.
Yeah.
You're talking about is kind of a small thing that like, you know, Okami is a big game.
Oh yeah, gorgeous, love it.
So like having that little bit where like they graffitied your mask onto the wall isn't is small in the grand scheme of the game.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, you know, sometimes those, like, they reuse some of that content to make it, like, feel more special.
But it's very much within, the reason that it's compelling is very much what you had said earlier, where it gives the world a little bit more life. Like, this is a town full of little rambunctious kids with too much time on their hands and a paintbrush.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're going to draw on walls.
Yeah.
And clearly you've charmed them for some reason. And that itself is charming.
Yeah.
I think, like, that I think a little extra world building. And especially putting you within the world, like you, like with sitting down on a bench is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to be on the lookout for more of these little, like, tiny interactions.
I did think it would be kind of, I don't think I've seen this in a horror game, but if you flush the toilet and then, like, a minute later, the toilet flushes again, and, like, I didn't flush the toilet. Who flushed the toilet? So scary.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I won't be playing that game.
Nope.
It's a cool idea.
Yeah, for someone else, not me.
Yeah. That's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes delivered to you 1 week early. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.